The streets around Harborview Medical Center are pretty deserted in the early morning. People who do happen by usually get treated to some classical music playing from the lamppost speakers. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and this is a special episode of Sound Effect from KNKX Seattle-Tacoma. Harborview is a cluster of pretty imposing buildings, and in the main one sits the emergency department.
Again, it's pretty quiet right now. Our busiest time of day is early to mid-afternoon.
Is this the calm before the storm?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's Chief of Trauma, Dr. Eileen Bulger. And don't let the quiet fool you. This ER is the only Level 1 trauma center serving an area covering four states and almost 100,000 square miles. At pretty much any moment, the place could break out in a flurry of activity.
So we had a girl just a few months ago who was involved in a cold water drowning.
911, what's your reporting?
Yeah, I'm stuck out here on a boat, paddle boat. Yes, north of Bering, Three Tree Point.
Oh my God!
It's okay, right?
And the phone cut out, so we're treating it as a possible person's in the water.
Friends are reeling tonight after the body of a Burien man was pulled from Puget Sound overnight by the U.S. Coast Guard. He died, but his female companion was rescued.
They believe it is nothing short of a miracle that she is still alive. They say that the temperature of Puget Sound was 47 degrees this morning, and she wasn't breathing.
She came in after 2.5 hours of CPR in the field. By all accounts, she looked dead. Her heart wasn't working. She had a lot of acid in her blood, which is a bad sign. But because of sort of the way that Harborview works, we had about 2 years ago implemented a program to bring in a new technology called ECMO, or extracorporeal membrane oxygenation. So we had to make a very quick judgment. Do we think there's a chance that this is recoverable? She's had a long period of CPR, but she's very young. And so we thought we'd give it a try. Everybody thought I was a little bit crazy, I think, because we decided to put her onto ECMO and rewarm her.
Was that your call?
Yeah, it was my call, yeah. So we put her onto ECMO and rewarmed her, and actually were able to get her heart beating again after we got her temperature up, and really actually surprised us that not only did her heart fully recover, but her brain fully recovered. That was amazing for us, and it was a good example of how if you kind of concentrate high-end specialty resources, you can kind of start to do these things that are pushing the envelope a little bit.
Harborview has been pushing the envelope ever since it began as the 6-bed King County Welfare Hospital in 1877. It's still owned by the county and run by UW Medicine. The most dire cases come here. Victims of accidents, burns, strokes, and crime. And there's a lot more to this place, too. Life and death stories, acts of heroism, the drama of social injustice. And they're all contained in this big Art Deco beacon atop Seattle's First Hill neighborhood. This hour on Sound Effect from KNKX, it's stories of Harborview Medical Center. At Harborview, it's not uncommon to find people who've been working there for decades, people who have shaped how the place runs. Harborview's lifers. Dr. Eileen Bulger trained under one of these individuals. His name is Dr. Michael Copas.
He would carry a radio, and he would listen into the medic calls. And if he wasn't happy with what they were doing, he would call them and tell them to do something different. And if it was a really complicated case, he would often show up. So it might be the middle of the night. He would show up in the ED and jump right in and help out and be like, where'd he come from? You know, because he's listening to the radio all the time. I mean, I don't know if he ever turned it off. So, you know, again, example of his commitment.
Today, Dr. Michael Copas is 80 years old. He had to retire in 2013 after a stroke. Among other jobs, Copas was director of emergency services for 35 years. On the job, Copas was known to be very direct and to the point. When it came to taking care of patients, he held himself and his staff to fiercely high standards. People who work with him either adored him or they walked the other way when they heard him coming down the hall. He dedicated himself to the practice of medicine as if it were a religious calling, and he helped change how trauma care is delivered in the Northwest, changes that continue to save lives today. Dr. Kopus's relationship with Harborview began when he was a child growing up in the Magnolia neighborhood in Seattle.
During World War II, there was a volunteer institution called Gray Ladies. My mother became a Gray Lady with her gray pinafore and her name stitched in or embroidered in red on the top of the bib, and she went to Harborview faithfully every Wednesday or Thursday afternoon, where she went to the floor that at that point in time was housing the people awaiting eye operations and ear, nose, and throat operations, and washed their feet so that when they got to the operating room, the stench would not overwhelm the surgeons. My memories of Harborview were that it was a dark place with green tile, sort of institutional bilious green tile, and had some remarkable smells or odors that wafted through the downstairs halls. Harborview's tradition of serving all comers dates back to its beginnings in the 1930s. So it attracted people who understood that principle and wanted to pursue it and felt that their professional skills would be well used in the service to people who were unable to compensate the physician for his care. And it was also a hospital where people of key ethnic backgrounds could be seen and not challenged.
He started his career at Harborview as a neurologist. He'd hang around in the emergency room looking for possible patients. And eventually, in 1974, he became director of emergency services.
The atmosphere was electric, truly magnetic. People enjoyed working with each other. People enjoyed their projects. And that enthusiasm was contagious down to the house officer, to the intern and the resident in medicine or surgery or orthopedist or neurosurgery or neurology or whatever it might be. So not only were people enthusiastic about what they were doing it well.
He says, much like today, Harborview back then was known as a place where new ideas were encouraged. In 1969, a Harborview doctor and a Seattle firefighter came up with the idea for Medic One, which trained firefighters to treat people in the field and turn the ambulances into mobile emergency rooms. It dramatically improved a patient's chance of surviving when they got to the hospital. Dr. Kopus was Medic One's medical director for many years. And then he had his own light bulb moment that changed emergency medicine in the Northwest forever. It was 1982, and he was in Sitka, Alaska.
It was a dark and stormy night.
He had just given a lecture and was at a restaurant, ready to tuck into some fish and chips.
And as I sat down, interesting gentleman in some Oshkosh by gosh sat down next to me and sort of breathed heavily in my ear and said, "They're practicing your talk." My talk was on triage in the hospital. George has got his hands full.
George Longenbaugh was the town surgeon.
And then the phone on the wall rang, and the waitress, who was a very nice lady in the standard Alaska waitress uniform of white blouse, dark green skirt, and gold bracelets, gold rings, and a gold necklace, turned to the assembled patrons and said, "Is there a Kopas here?" And I said, "That could be me, ma'am."
A house had caught fire, and several children were inside.
I grabbed my coat, and we went, got in this rusted-out Ford, and drove over to Sitka Community Hospital, where George was managing a intubated child, and the child smelled a little crispy, like it was branding time at the OK Corral, and the child was burned terribly. So he was manfully manning a anesthesia machine, which was using as a ventilator, and he was busy resuscitating that child, and there were two more in the room.
The doctors knew they had to get the kids to Harborview's burn center, 850 miles away.
We didn't have any idea how we could do that, so I started on the phone calling every fixed base operator who chartered aircraft from Seattle to San Francisco, and finally got hold of some place in Corvallis, Oregon. We wrapped up the poor little child, 12-year-old girl, actually, in clean sheets and took her out to the aircraft. So suddenly that Lear roared to full turbine power, and he released the brakes, and we shot up into the air. It was like riding in a F4. And the last thing I remember is looking down on the sick as we went straight into the air. And we headed south, and the child died over the Dixon Entrance, which is the stretch of water between the Alexander Archipelago, which is southeast Alaska, and the Queen Charlotte Islands. So I said to the pilot, this child died, and he said, don't tell me that, because we'll have to land. We're over Canadian water. Tell me she died till we get to over U.S. water. So we didn't say another word till we got over the Strait of Juan de Fuca. Later on that day, I thought to myself, why in the living heck should a doctor, namely George Longenbaugh, a wonderful man that he was, have to spend a day or half a day on the phone trying to find transportation when it could be there if he just picked up the phone and dialed one number?
The idea was to fly trauma care directly to the patients, applying an airborne version of that same mobile emergency room model that the ambulances use, and then bring those patients back to Harborview. This was how Airlift Northwest was born.
It started off with a turboprop aircraft. It was a T-tailed Cheyenne 3, and it was the first airlift aircraft, and we made many trips to Sitka, many trips to Ketchikan. My wife was absolutely convinced there was no more live persons in Ketchikan or Port Angeles left because we'd taken them all to Seattle.
The calls were answered by a woman in Seattle's Smith Tower who would then page Dr. Kopus.
And I had a gigantic cell phone, used to look like a brick. I had also a list of every fire department, every hospital emergency room, and many of the doctors in Alaska and Montana that I could call and say, this is what's going on. I need for you to pick up my crew, and this is what we need to do to get that patient ready to travel. So all that working together seemed to make sense at the time, and it's sort of the model that continues to this day.
Today, Airlift Northwest has airplanes and helicopters based from Olympia, Washington, up to Juneau, Alaska, and east in Yakima, ready to fly the sick and injured to help. They've now carried more than 100,000 patients from as far as western Montana to Harborview and other hospitals. In 2013, when Dr. Kopus had his stroke, his relationship with Harborview changed. He experienced his beloved hospital not as a doctor, but as a patient.
I learned that it is difficult to stay cheerful when the world is falling about your ears. I just stayed in one place in the bed and kept my mouth shut. I thought I did not need to editorialize on anything happening to me. I was so spoiled, I became embarrassed.
At one point, Kopus was treated by one of his former students. He says the care he received was superb. Throughout his career, Kopus has trained hundreds of men and women how to be doctors.
The most satisfying part of that job was watching a person, young, still wet behind the ears, swagger into the ER, if it was a he, that she's just very quietly walked into the ER, and 4 years later, they walked out capable of taking care of a dying patient and preventing that death. The most rewarding thing was seeing that growth. I still wish I was there. I get a very strong feeling. I can see each floor, and I know what's on each floor, and I say, I've been in that room. I took care of people in that room. I've been in that clinic. I wish I were there now doing something that I know how to do. And all of a sudden, I just had to give it up, and that would just cut my heart out, to be honest with you. I haven't gotten over it yet.